coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It's Thursday, August 25th, 2022. I want to welcome everyone to this program. This will be one of the programs. I'm going to tell you right now, you will not want to miss this. And I would ask everyone who's listening to this, call someone you know, have them tune in, download this broadcast. This is going to be one of the most important broadcasts, I believe, that we've done in a long time. And this has to do with the economy, with your money, my money, pension funds, the stock market, the all of this. This is kind of where are things headed? The petrodollar, where are things headed right now? And what are some of the signs that we're in some deep trouble? Well, with me right now is Steve Quayle from stevequayle.com, gen6.com, and Aaron Brickman. Man, you know, Aaron Brickman is one of the most, really one of the smartest guys I know, and I'm not blowing smoke up his skirt. I'm telling you the truth. Aaron Brickman, skipper.io. Links will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. I want to thank you again for joining us. Thank you for your belief and your trust in us. And again, I would urge everyone, please pass this broadcast around. All right. Without wasting any time whatsoever, I'm going to pass it right over to Steve from stevequayle.com. Steve, my brother, so good to see you. So good that you're here.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you being here. And then why don't you go ahead and take it from there. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, one of the most problematic institutions in the world is trying to understand that the universities, the institutions, have changed the meaning of words. Wall Street and all of the different financial publications that are on the net, they mean one thing when their actions really mean another. So I'm going to ask Aaron, and Aaron's going to give us an understanding of the words collapse. We're going to hear the difference between the, if you will, the public sector pablum and what's really going on. And Aaron is the original psychoanalyst, and I don't know anybody. This is not flattery. Obviously, he's my friend, but who knows history? So with no further ado, Aaron, let's go ahead and take on the terms that people use mistakenly, and I believe is a subterfuge for keeping people from really understanding what's going on in the economy of the United States and the world. Go ahead, sir. Thank you, by the way, for coming on.
Well, thank you, Steve, and thank you, Doug. It's a pleasure to be here again, and appreciate you guys reaching out and having me. let's define some words before we jump in and talk about war cycles and economic cycles and what I believe is highly possible this fall. So when I, you know, there's no technical definition of the words we're going to use, but I think it's important the audience knows where I'm coming from when I use these words today, or we can all agree upon a defined meaning today in the conversation. A crash to me, when you hear somebody talk about a crash, I think 1929, 1987, 1907, 2020, March 2020, and obviously 2008. A crash, what you'll find interesting is the crashes of 1987, 2008, and March of 2020 were all within 1% of each other. That was 35%. 35% loss in the stock market, specifically the stock market. That to me is, and obviously that's over a 50-year period of market tumult. That to me is a crash, 34-35%. 1929 is the granddaddy of them all. It was 40-45%. Let me redefine this. When I say a crash, because obviously 1929 was like 80-90% when it was done. We're talking an 8-week time period where you go from a high to an extreme low in 8 weeks. It's in 40 to 44 days, trading days. So it's about 60 calendar days. So you're talking 8 weeks, 35% drop, 1987, 2008, and March of 2020. 1929 did 45%. That's extreme. The only one crash that led to what I would consider a economic collapse is 1929. That 45% drop kickstarted the party, and that market went straight down until July of 1932. You had 1931 and 32 is when the banks started going under. Obviously, that led to the Great Depression and eventually World War II. And that wasn't just in the United States. If you go look at what was happening in Europe, it was a disaster as well. So these have global repercussions when they come on the scene. So when I'm looking at this year, let's just dive in and talk about this year. When I'm looking at this year, I want to take the audience through a number of signatures that have to be present in the market for a potential crash. So you guys can hand me a calendar over the next 10 years, and I can tell you what years you cannot have a crash. Okay. It doesn't mean I can tell you what years will for sure have a crash, but it's the likelihood. So as you well know, Steve, I trade crashes. I do not trade markets. I really find it boring, the daily ups and downs of the ticker. But I'm like big wave surfing. So I'm looking at when can I ride historic waves. So over the last 2-3 years, I've been extremely excited about this year because I looked at the calendar and you could see a major potential for this year. So why am I saying that? So let me go through what has to be, and I think this is, if there's anybody in your audience that likes to trade or especially wants to learn more about this, I'm going to give you guys some references and resources and they can go out on their own. Nobody has taught me anything I'm going to say. It's an accumulation of research and knowledge and real world experience over the last 20, 30 years. I will say that I find today interesting. Today is the anniversary top all-time high that led to the crash in 1987. Okay, today. That crash was, I was 13 years old. That crash was foundational for me. I fell in love with the markets and I think I stayed up to like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning at night in October after the crash. I was just enthralled with Wall Street and that type of market action. So that started me just doing a lot of study and research and history. And as I became an adult, I was able to trade. I was short for 2001. I was short for 2008. I was short for 2015. And I'm going to be short for this year. What does short mean? Short all means that I will bet that the market is going down using options, futures, you know, some sophisticated vehicles. And you have to be very precise with knowing when to do it, how much leverage to do it, and where your price targets are at. So this is not, if you've never done this, do not even begin. You know, it'd be like a, you know, grabbing your surfboard and you never surfed and going out to pipeline out in Hawaii. You're going to drown. You're going to get killed. So don't do it. But for those people that are interested or have done it before and want to learn a little bit more, I hope this conversation today will spur you guys on or spur those people on. Okay, so what has to be present for a economic, you're not going to have an economic collapse without having a crash. So the first thing you need to do is we'll get to the collapse here in a second, but we got to work through the crash and why a crash is even possible this year. Okay, so I would liken it to like a 6 or 7 digit combination lock. If you get 5 out of 7, you're not going to get a crash. You have to get all of what we're going to talk about in place and in alignment for a possibility of a stock market crash. It is no way guaranteeing it, but it's highly likely. So Chris Carolin, who was a phenomenal trader, he was a pit trader out of Chicago in the 1980s. He wrote what I consider one of the seminal works on the comparison of 1929, 1997, and 1987 stock market crash. He has written a phenomenal book, High Math. I won't go into everything he has discovered, but we'll put that link in the description below, because he wrote a book, and then he wrote a subsequent paper called Autumn Panics that won the Dow Theory Award. And what it showed was that the bottoms of the crash in 1929, 1987, 1997, and then it turned out again in 2008, were all on the same lunar date. You wouldn't know that looking at our solar-based calendar. If you were looking at a lunar-based calendar, that is something significant. That for the listeners this year is going to be October 21st. So you have to know first, where is the crash going to end? It would end on October 21st, which is a Friday. Secondly, Steve Pitts, a different individual, came along and he noted that all crashes in U.S. history, and I think there's like 9 or 10 now, going back to the 1700s, all of them have the same lunar signature. The panic begins near a full moon that occurs within 6 weeks of a solar eclipse. Okay, that's very important to note. So when people thought the market could crash in June of this year, there was no way that was possible because it was not near a solar eclipse. The solar eclipse occurs this fall on October 25th. Now, I just said the bottom of the crash will, if there's a crash, will occur on October 21st. Now, the second digit of the lock is, oh my gosh, there's a solar eclipse 4 days later. Okay. The third contribution was by an individual named Arch Crawford, who is now retired. He wrote a paper, which I'll put in the link below as well, that there's a Mars-Uranus cycle that has been present in all the crashes of the 20th century. And that cycle is in effect until December, and then the window closes. Okay. So people that are calling for a crash saying, no, we're not going to crash this year, we're going to crash next year. Mars-Uranus cycle says, no, if there's going to be a crash, it has to be this year.
Aaron, okay. Let me stop you just for a minute. I think people need to understand this. Mars in antiquity and the stars in antiquity, that we're not talking, how do I say this? We're not talking astrology, but God said the signs would be in the sun, moon, and stars. And when you see correlations, I just want to clarify this for everyone, and I'm going to turn it right back to you. We're talking about signs in the heavens that are cause and effect. So that's what he's talking about when he's talking about some of the best traders have noticed these planetary positions. And again, I just want to put that into effect that Mars has always been associated with war. So when we're talking about the war that's going on right now and the war, and now Aaron's bringing us into the historic context of what the some of the smartest and most accurate guys are doing, it is in relationship to this. And again, we are at that point in history. So go ahead, Aaron. I just wanted
to... thank you for interjecting, because let's talk about astrology for a second. We're not talking in astrology. I mean, they've even messed up that term. Astrology and Wall Street, the billionaires study astrology on Wall Street, but it's not the type of astrology that the average American is used to, where it's, you know, forecasting, you know, is this going to be a good relationship, or what's going to happen to me next week? They're not concerned about that. What they're looking at, and they're using computers now to do all this, is they're looking at the what were the heavens declaring? What was in alignment at all these crashes? Okay, where was there commonality in the stars going back to the 1700s when you look at all these crashes? Okay, and so they're not looking that it's predictive. It's just coincidental. Let's say it's just coincidental. But let's get rid of causation. But we could go there in a second, and just say, oh my gosh, you know, if every single crash is triggered by a full moon for the last 200 years, maybe I should pay attention to full moons. Okay, if every crash bottoms 2 days in front of a new moon, maybe I should know where that's at on the chart. If Mars Uranus is in a certain configuration for the last 200 years at every crash, you know, you don't have to understand why that's occurring. You just need to take note of it.
May now, I interrupt you one last time, Aaron? And absolutely. Then I want people to understand this. It's critical to know that even the, and this is why it's important. By the way, the word lunatic would describe right. a lot of the people on Wall Street and even beyond the billionaires. But what's critical about this is the fact that one of the fallen angels taught mankind how to understand cause and effects based on that. I mean, yeah, that was a direct intervention in mankind's development and from, you know, the creation on Garden Eden. So that's really critical too, because there is a, you know, we can laugh and call them lunatics, but this is, I mean, again, I think it's really important, Doug and Aaron, that we put it in the context for people so they understand it. That's all I'm going to say now. Go ahead, Aaron.
Well, yeah. I mean, the word lunatic comes from the understanding that around lunar cycles were affecting the human mind. Okay. Now, Steve Pitts, who we just talked about, who noted that all the crashes, you know, occur within 6 weeks of a solar eclipse, wrote the Unified Cycle Theory book. It's extremely complex. He goes through about five different energy particles that he believes are affecting the human mind. So it's really starting to explain why planetary alignments in lunar and solar eclipses could be affecting, well, they're all obviously affecting life on the planet, but from an electrical discharge, what it's doing to the human mind and to bodies of water. And especially since the human body is mostly a body of water, this starts to explain why lunar and solar influences, gravitational influences, as well as electromagnetic influences, would be altering the mind at different points. In investing, let's make sure we understand investing. Investing is ruled by two emotions, fear and greed. Okay. So there is the fear of missing out. You guys have heard FOMO, the fear of missing out. And so you get these bubbles. And when that bubble breaks, there's the fear that you're going to lose everything. Okay. So you really have two emotions driving all investment decisions. So, and that can be impacted when you get these configurations in the planets. So we've talked about, so then let's get to the good stuff. So I have heard nobody talk about this, but I discovered it on my own. Every crash in U.S. history that has occurred in the fall, okay, and I'm not talking about March crashes. Usually there's only two time periods, and I'm not going to get into the equinoxes and solstices today, but those are very super important in crashes. What is interesting to note is that every crash that has occurred in the fall in 1929, 1907, 1987, 1997 have all been triggered by the high holy days on the Jewish calendar. Without exception. But think about that. God has, what are the high holy days? The high holy days in the fall, and you can find this in Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 23. There is Rosh Hashanah, which occurs in the fall. This year it's on September 25th and 6th. And that is the blowing of the trumpets. It's a holy day. It's a convocation day. And it is the beginning of the religious new year on the Jewish calendar. It's not January 1st for God. That's for us. It's Rosh Hashanah for the Jews and prescribed by the Lord. That calls the nation to 10 days of fasting and prayer and repentance. 10 days later is Yom Kippur, the Day of Judgment. In biblical or in Jewish tradition, that is when your fate is sealed for the following year with the Lord. On the 15th, so first of Tishrei is, which is the month, first of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah. The 10th of Tishrei is Yom Kippur. On the 15th of Tishrei is the Feast of Tabernacles. The Feast of Tabernacles is a 7-8-day celebration where it's also known as the Feast of Booths, where the Israelites were commanded to create makeshift tents and live in them for 7 days to commemorate the wandering in 40 years in Sinai and entering into the promised land, entering into the promises of God. Okay. So, this blew my mind when I discovered it, and it has held, I've known it for 20 years, and it is still held through the last couple of crashes. 1929. Let me paint a picture for you. The market, this is how crashes occur. You're at a top. Can be an all-time high or just a top, doesn't matter. You come down very dramatically for 2 to 4 weeks, down very dramatically. And we're talking anywhere from 10 to 17% loss in the market. You then stop. You then have a rally. The rally comes back up. It does not go as high. And I'm not going to get into the math today, but it does a Fibonacci retracement, usually a 618 retracement. It takes a week and a half. That is what's in Elliott wave terms is called a wave two. At that point, you then roll over into a wave three. Wave threes are crash waves. Okay. The market moves in waves for listeners that don't understand this. All of life moves in waves. But since human emotion oscillates back and forth, so it's energy. All of our activity is energy, and energy moves in waves. So the market, when you look at a chart, the market moves in waves because it's just a price reference point for a bunch of buying and selling decisions made by emotional human beings. Okay. So this whole period takes about 8 weeks to play out. I just lost my train of thought. The point at which you have a rally, a final last ditch rally in 1929 and 1987 literally started on Rosh Hashanah. You rallied, and when you got to Yom Kippur, it literally began the crash. Like, that day triggered, like, you're done. To the very day, you're done. You're rolling over, and you're now going to go into a crash. The crash concluded at the end of the Feast of Tabernacles. The Feast of Tabernacles, reading from Leviticus 23. Also on the 15th day of the seventh month, which ye have gathered in the fruit of the land, ye shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the eighth day shall be a Sabbath. And ye shall take you on the first day the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and boughs of thick trees, and willows of the brook, and ye shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. What was happening in 29 and 87 is the crash. The entire crash is being governed by the Jewish calendar. Okay. Now, that Jewish calendar, we talked about the locks. We've talked about all the lunar and solar and planetary stuff that has to be into place. What's most important is all that has to align on a Jewish calendar and fit perfectly with the high holy days. Okay. That hardly ever happens. It didn't happen last year. It didn't happen the year before. It didn't happen. You can give me a calendar. It's there's very few years it happens. This year, this year is more perfect than 2008. This thing is shaping up to be almost identical. In fact, it's almost identical to 1929 on the calendar. Okay, even the solar eclipses and lunar eclipses are in identical positions that they were at in 1929. Okay. So what does that look like this fall? What it looks like this fall is we have either topped on August 16th, or we are going to top very shortly. There will be a very scary down move that will commence. That down move should be done by September 23rd. When I say, and we should get on the Dow back down to the June lows. We should go back down to 29,500. Okay. And we should be there in the next 3-4 weeks. There will then be a final rally. This rally will be very fast, probably less than a week. Could be even as short as 3 days. It'll be very fast, and it will come back up probably on the Dow, giving everybody a reference, probably 31,000, 32,000. If we are rallying, okay, into Yom Kippur, we crash. At that point, if I see that configuration, we crash right into October 21st. Okay. Now, 2008, God threw everybody a curveball. You really have to be paying attention to know all this stuff. You can't just take what I'm saying. I mean, if you don't understand this and you haven't studied this, you're probably not going to make it, because each time there's a curveball. What was the curveball in 2008? Yom Kippur was not the trigger for the crash. Rosh Hashanah was. Literally Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, guys, if you remember the day the Dow was down 777 points?
Yes.
Okay. It was like God stamping it, and that literally all hell began to break loose in the markets. Okay. That was Rosh Hashanah. It caught any good Jew who understands what I'm talking about got completely caught off guard, because God moved the entire crash sequence up a full 10 days, but still marked it on his calendar. It's still being triggered by the high holy days. Instead of 1929 and 1987, where the crash concluded at the end of the Feast of Tabernacles, literally in 2008, the crash ended at the beginning of the Feast of Tabernacles. In all three instances, 29, 87, 08, the high holy days were there as triggers. Okay. They were marking the major turns in the market. So let me put this into English for the average listener. All the planetary alignments are there right now. The night that we could see a dramatic decline in the stock market. Furthermore, we already have the last 6 months as our guide that the markets have significantly broken down housing is rolling over. Unemployment, I mean, I'm not going to go through all the economic numbers today, but suffice it to say, the average American knows that something is amiss in the economy. So you already have that as the background for a potential crash. That's super important. So you already have some context that this is possible. Okay. If we roll over from here, I will say this, and I know this is going to say a mouthful, and I know it's dangerous what I'm about to say. And I know exactly what I'm saying because I know better than the audience the history of that. What I'm about to say is pretty radical. Steve Quayle has never heard me talk about 1929. I don't talk about 1929 because you're an idiot if you start talking about 1929 in regards to stock market crashes. That is like comparing a baseball hitter to Babe Ruth. You don't do stuff like that. It shows your ignorance of baseball and what Babe Ruth accomplished. So having said that, I will say this. This year, if we crash, will be as big as 1929. Okay. The markets are showing that this thing has the makings of seeing a 40 to 50 to 60% drop in the stock market, a complete wipeout. Okay. To put that into context, if we crash this year, I would not be surprised to see the stock market. The stock market right now is in like the 33,000s. Check that. Yep, 33,118. I would not be surprised by November to see the stock market at 15,000. Okay. If there is a crash, it will be over by October 21st. Okay. By the way, in 1962, in the Cuban Missile Crisis, the same lunar dates that we bottomed in 29, 87, and 08, that same date was when we went to our highest DEFCON level during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And as soon as we hit that date, the Cuban Missile Crisis subsided. That's just phenomenal. Okay. All right. So let's talk big picture. Now that we know that the crash is possible, and if it and it's met, it's meeting a number of solar and lunar and planetary alignments.
Aaron, yeah. once again, I want you to explain to people what that means, because most people say, oh, big deal, I'm not in the stock market, but it affects all forms of commercial paper. It affects everything. I mean, just in the United States, you're losing 50%, half.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and that's where I was exactly going to go, Steve. So thank you for prompting that. No, you're spot on. Okay, so let's talk about the bigger cycles at play. Now that we know that we can have a crash because it meets a bunch of conditions that have always been present in the last 200 years. Now we need to pull back and go, well, where are we at historically? Where are we at in cycle? Okay. So the first big depression in the United States was the panic of 1837 to 1842. And that's when Andrew Jackson is dissolving the second bank, and it's a repeat of right now. It's the banker wars. Or rather, I would say right now is a repeat of that. Anyways, the market, there was a planetary, you're going to find this fascinating. There was a Saturn squaring Uranus. Saturn squaring Uranus occurs every 45 years. Okay. This is not something that's frequent. It occurred that year in 1842 when the stock market bottomed. Okay. That bottom saw the market over those years lose 80% of its value. That was historic in the early American experience. 45 years later, you have a Saturn-Uranus square again. 45 years later is 1932. 1932 sees the bottom of the stock market collapse again. That time, it was from 1929 to 32. That time, the market lost 90% of its value. So you have 1842, 1932. 80%, 90%. This year, we're seeing Saturn square Uranus. Okay. For the third time in, this is a 90-year cycle. The technicians that it exactly comes out to November of this year. Okay. The technicians are very concerned a historic crash could occur between now and November to match the 90-year cycles of 1842 and 1932. Okay. In addition, now both those cycles, those 90-year cycles were dramatic 80, 90% losses in the stock market and had significant it wasn't like 1987 or 2008. It wasn't where it was some bad economic times, so people lost their jobs and the market just, you know, and we're back to the good days the next day. Those were dramatic reshaping of the economic infrastructure. Okay. It really changed life in the United States and especially on Wall Street. In addition to that, there is, in 1929, we set the all-time high. We crashed into 1932. You came back up into 1937, 38. You then came back down. You then kickstart World War II. So it was really, there was a really about a 15-year period where the market was down and didn't really get kickstarted into a bull run until 1942. 1942 began the next bull run. Okay, into the 1967-8 top. That cycle has a 1,080. That cycle has another cycle that came into, that's a 40-year cycle. So that was 1942. The next cycle, a 40-year cycle, was 1982. 1982, if you guys will remember, kickstarted the bull market that we're now experiencing, the biggest economic expansion in human history. Okay. That 40-year cycle is due also this November. In fact, it's due the third or fourth week of November. So what am I saying? I'm saying we have a 40-year cycle and we have a 45, or we have 90-year cycles that are both equated to major bottoms in the stock market. The 90-year cycle is equated to 1842 and 1932, and the 40-year cycle is related to 1942 and 1982. Both those cycles are due to converge in November. At the same time, we've checked all the major astrological conditions that meet a crash. I'm almost 50 years old. We've never had this. Okay. So the technicians are saying there is something dramatic that can take place between now and November. Okay. Crashes, if you look at stock charts, crashes appear to come out of the blue. Okay, like the average person will, when they think about 2008, they were caught totally unaware. Now, yeah, that's crazy because if you go back and look, you had Bear Stearns going under in March of 2008. You already had housing rolling over, but the average person was oblivious to how bad it could get and how quickly, you know, the money market, you know, could totally dry up and the whole system could freeze up almost overnight. Okay. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, you've sailed, Steve. You know what it's like to be on the ocean. You can have blue skies and within 30 minutes be in the middle of a storm that's going to wreck your boat and kill you. Okay. And that's what we're talking about when you get all these conditions present, is you have to be hyper aware that there is a significant possibility for an extreme down move. Okay. Now that you have these major cycles, the 90-year cycle marking 1842 and 1932 present, and it could be present again here this November. What I'm saying is you could see a dramatic 50, 60% drop in the stock market in the next 2 to 3 months. What I believe that will do is fundamentally alter, and I don't know what those are. I mean, I'm not clairvoyant. I'm not going to tell you what life is going to look like on the other side of that. Okay. Mm-hmm. What I am going to say is that credit is going to dry up. Okay. Just like it's dried up in every recession, much less stock market crash. So credit conditions are going to dry up. And what we have right now that we did not have at these other historical time periods is we did not have supply chains breaking. We did not have crops being destroyed by design. We did not have food prices escalating. Okay, so we've got the worst of both worlds. We've got a deflationary collapse in the prices of bonds, stocks, and real estate. At the same time, you're having inflationary impact on the cost of goods and services. Okay, that's not normal, by the way. That you don't see that. You didn't see that in 2008. Okay, and you didn't see it in 1929. You didn't see it in 1987. Okay, so. You had stagflation in the 70s. So yeah, you had inflation, but you didn't have the stock market and the bond market getting completely destroyed. Okay. Yeah, you had the stock market losing. You basically had what they referred to as a lost decade where it didn't go anywhere. Okay, it was up, it was down, it didn't go. So you had, 10 years of investment horizon that treaded water. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a 50, 60% drop in asset values. At the same time, somebody tell me, what are we going to, I've seen articles talking about the doubling and tripling of food prices next year. Combine that with a loss of credit for businesses, combine that with bonds defaulting, corporations defaulting. I can tell you all the companies right now are already instituting hiring freezes. My son works for a top tech company out of Silicon Valley, and they instituted hiring freezes 2-3 months ago. Amazon's done it. All the top tech have already done it. And now the rumors are that the layoffs are pending. Okay. And tech is worlds ahead of the regular business operations in the United States because they have access to huge amounts of funding. So if tech is getting ready to lay off workers, with the amount of VC funding that's available to them, I can only imagine what's happening to the small and medium businesses.
Aaron, the purchasing managers, beyond the index, there's all these ancillary references to the fact that orders are being canceled by Walmart and Amazon and Shopko and even Target. Target lost 90% of its profit this year. So where are we at? I mean, I want you to give the realistic picture. If you have 50% of the workforce that's now employed right at this time, if that is fired, let go by whatever means, war, whatever, where does that leave what I would call a reality-based view of where the U.S. is going to be? Because again, rising prices, I think I saw where on Zero Hedge, where the price of a barrel in oil, our price of oil per barrel in Germany now is the equivalent of $410. So I don't think people understand this. You said, just like your analogy of the ship, it can come up so quick. But if you had a coordinate, I believe because of the evil of these illegitimate people that obviously don't serve God, if you had them in agreement, in a consortium, agreeing that on Friday the 15th of, let's say, October, they're going to let go half their workforce. I mean, some are letting go 3,000. What would that look like? Because you and I know what it looks like because, we're looking at all this stuff in history. But explain for the Hagman listeners and viewers what that will look like with a 50% unemployment, with all the lying numbers that are out there now, which I don't believe any of them, but anything that comes out of the government official numbers, but tell people, so, paint that picture.
I don't believe the system is coming apart. Now, that's me. That doesn't mean I'm right. I'm just telling you that's my viewpoint right now. I don't think it's time for the system to come apart. I think what the cycles are actually arguing is that we are, I'm going to say some crazy stuff now, is that we could see an insane bull market about to begin. Yes, you heard me right. An insane bull market about to begin. However, right before the bull market starts, they're going to level the playing field. Okay. There's two things going on. There's history and cycles that are affecting the human condition of fear and greed. So these are natural functions where we create bubbles because of our greed. We have a misallocation of capital, and then we have to pay the piper. Okay. At the same time, there's no doubt that they are being helped, engineered, and prodded along by the powers that be. But I don't want people to think that the powers that be are omnipotent to the point that they can, that they're not the puppet masters some people think they are when it comes to the markets. The markets is a collection of the human experience of buying and selling, and they can manipulate it to a degree, but they cannot on a daily basis just move it about where they want it. Okay. These are huge forces. We're talking trillions and trillions of dollars at work on a daily basis. But they can certainly take advantage and prod it along. I think what they're going to do is we're going to see wash, rinse, repeat. What is wash, rinse, repeat? It means that we have a misallocation of capital. We have a bubble. The Goldman's, Sachs of the world, the JP Morgan's, they know this. They're not long this market. Are you kidding me? They're massively going to be short. They're going to make a killing in the crash. And they will take this, and we're continuing to reallocate capital from the weak hands to the strong. The rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer. Okay, so the average American is not going to get out of the stock market now. They'll get out of the stock market when it's at 15,000. Okay. And at that point, once they've shaken the tree loose, the JP Morgans, the Goldmans, all the hedge funds will come back in, and they'll buy up America on the cheap, and we'll begin the next round of asset appreciation. Okay. Now there is coming a brick wall where this game is over. I don't believe this game is over yet. I think they got one more card to play. Having said that, and I said this on the last two programs, if you get into a dollar collapse, which I'm not talking about right now, I'm talking about a stock market and bond market collapse. If you get into a dollar collapse, you hit that brick wall. All bets are off. Okay, this thing goes, that's a whole nother day's conversation. That the dollar collapse is Mad Max, or it has the potential of, I mean, you don't even want to contemplate a dollar collapse. We have not seen a dollar collapse. 1929 was not a dollar collapse. I mean, so take your worst nightmare and you'll be approaching a dollar collapse.
Okay, let me interrupt you right there for a second. Obviously, with what Russia's done with the ruble, most of the BRIC nations have basically said, we don't want the dollar any longer. What event would you think would bring about that dollar collapse that's off of everybody's radar? Because
A euro collapse. If I saw the euro collapse, I would think we have less than 2 weeks.
Okay. That's critical, because right now the euro's in big trouble. And I mean, Europe as a whole, trading block is in big trouble. So based on Aaron's 1 to 10 scale, and I'm just making this up, so people say, I want a copy of Aaron's 1 to 10 scale. Just for this interview, where are we based on what you see in all the economic indicators of the proximity to a euro collapse?
Oh, I guess it depends on how stupid they get with Russia, and they're pretty stupid right now. So let's see if they double down on stupid, which they seem to be wanting to do as they go into the winter. The thing about the currency collapse is the currencies can literally happen. I mean, gosh, if you think the stock market can happen overnight, oh my gosh, you're talking central banks. You're talking, I mean, we're not talking grandma and grandpa dumping euros, and that's why it crashes. I mean, like you said, we're talking about nations conspiring together, having announcements, having massive trillion-dollar dumpings. I mean, you know, you and I are not privy to those conversations, that's to be sure. So those things are, but all the signs will be present. And to your point, the signs are present right now. I mean, obviously we're seeing the BRICS formalize with, like, the BRICS, this is nothing new with the BRICS and with Russia and China. They've been working on this since 2008. Okay. They're just now telling the average person who will listen that about what they're getting ready to do. But you've got to understand that currency collapses, we're talking, I mean, stock market collapses. I mean, I just gave you four or five examples over the last 100 years. I mean, and there's a lot of even minor ones, to be sure, in between there. Currency collapses? I mean, you don't get it because the nation is done. Like right. That experiment is, I mean, good luck trying to survive it. Now, we have had two currencies destroyed in the U.S. history, but it forever changed the life in the United States. So I'm not saying the America is done, but life as you know it is done. I will assure you of that. And they don't happen. I mean, they happen within hundreds of years. I mean, you don't just go and plan on it. So I would look, we're the empire. The world is using the dollar. Most of the dollars are actually located outside the United States, not inside the U.S. banking system. So we are the empire. The crumbling of the empire will not occur at the core. It will occur at the periphery. It will occur with our partners in Korea, in Japan, in obviously Europe, Germany, France, England. Okay, that's what you need to be watching is the periphery. So a euro collapse, I would say this, and we'll talk about this if it occurs, but if you saw a euro collapse, you got 2 weeks or less.
And at this point, with the, how should I say this, the disengagement of the West, Western Europe, from all the necessities that they need from Russia, natural gas, oil, the shutting off of electricity they're talking about in Germany, the draconian measures of France, and you're a student of the French Revolution, they're proposing 3,000, this is critical to what we're talking about, 3,000 climate Gestapo guys. And in their language, they said, this will be revolutionary. So as each country vies for its place in the World Economic Foundation, the coordinated effort being led by insane people behind the scenes, not just the insane people you see on the scene, we're talking about a higher potential for the collapse of the euro than we've ever seen, are we not, at this point in history?
We definitely are. I mean, the question is, can they kick the can and save the system one last time? And I will say this, we know how it did. I will be very specific. This ends in blood and tears. Okay. This is how this whole thing ends, is in blood and tears. How you get there? It's going to take longer than everybody thinks. It's already taken longer than everybody thinks. And I will say this, having traded for over 20 years, my mistakes in the past were because I underestimated the magicians. I underestimated literally the ability to change the rules, make up new rules, bail people out, print money. I mean, this is insane. I mean, this is why it ends in blood and tears. You can only do this for so long, but I'm not foolish enough now. They did it in 2001. They did it in 2008.
The thing is different though, Aaron. Let me ask you this. You know, obviously a student of the Cold War, I've written about it. You were a ranger in the military. You're retired now. But the point being is that when you read, and again, the difference is you're a technical analyst and your charts are more correct than the fundamentals for the same reason you said. You know, people would think that why isn't gold $3,000 an ounce now or silver $200, $300 an ounce? Because Russia just accused the United States of having armed nuclear bombing runs, okay? They just announced they're going to blow up London. And so what I'm saying is, as you look at those factors, on the whole situation about a currency collapse. That's what you're talking about. It would seem that there is no indication in the market at this point, in at least in the stock market, Dow Jones, because of the magicians, that they even have any concern about World War III or the nuclear dissolution of Washington.
Well, look. Well, we got to separate that from actually. Look, I read a chart, and you know, the charts will tell you if war is likely or not. You know, you've called me in the past, and I've said, no, can't have a war. Right? Why not? Well, because this is the configuration of the chart. And I'm not going to explain why that's possible, but for some people, they probably will understand why. News doesn't, and I know you agree with this, news does not drive events. News does not drive the stock market. I know this is completely at odds with everything the average person has come to believe and know. It's just like there's a massive fallacy out there that the Fed sets interest rates. The Fed does not set interest rates. Okay. The bond market sets it. The Fed acts like they're in control. Okay. This is the illusion that the puppet masters have created, is that the events drive the markets or decisions by a handful of men drive markets. They don't. I can tell you what drives markets. Gann, who was a famous technician in the 30s on Wall Street, was asked, what is more important, price or time? And he said time, because when time is up, price will reverse. What he understood was what Solomon said about times and seasons. Okay. He understood that you need to, if you want to make a life studying something, study time, not history, events, names, dates. Study the time sequence, okay? Because all of this is about timing. Now, why do I go on that long diatribe? Because I'm looking at a market collapse. Now, if you're looking at a market collapse, is there a potential for war? Sure. I don't know what the trigger for the collapse is. I just told you that the planets are saying that it could happen and the charts are saying it could happen. What is the quote unquote reason that CNN is going to ascribe to it? Sure. War, Ukraine, Mideast, China, South Sea. I don't know. I just know that something, the market is saying something wicked this way could come. That's what it's saying. Something dramatic and historic could happen to catch the average. The average investor is not going to wake up in a pure panic and have something on the scale of 1929 tomorrow morning. There's going to be something that pushes them over the edge. Okay. What I am saying, though, is that where they could take this after the dust settles from a war or whatever, you know, gas prices, whatever happened, you know, energy collapse in Europe this winter, whatever that, you know, let's go back through this. Energy collapse in Europe, highly possible because they're doubling down on stupid with the Russians. We're going to see massive food increases next year. Everything I've read, there's no way around that. I mean, the food prices we're suffering from right now have nothing to do with the crops of 2022. It's from the crops in 2021. So add some fertilizer increase in diesel prices and everything that we've come to know in 2022, we're not even going to see that reflected in commodities until next year at the retail level. Okay. At the same time, we're seeing housing collapse. Look, housing, I'm not going to show you a housing chart right now, but I'm telling you housing, I've never seen a housing chart. The average cost of a home in the United States went parabolic after COVID. Okay. That thing right now, we could drop the average home in America could lose 40% of its value and just get back to the mean average that has been historical for the last 100 years. Okay. We're talking going back to the mean. We're not talking about overshooting to the downside. We're just talking about getting back into historical alignment. It could lose 40% from here. Okay. At the same time, the interest rates should be continue to move up with inflation. I would say you're going to have massive job loss. You're going to have loss of credit. You're going to have housing collapsing. It's going to be bad. Now, why do I say it doesn't necessarily have to be system ending? Because the powers that be might have one more card left up their sleeve, and that is print so much money and the Federal Reserve will actually buy the stock market. I think that's what they're getting ready to do. You'd say, well, that can't happen. Well, Japan did it. The Japanese government owns most of the treasuries and then most of the stock market. And it hasn't been a lost decade. It's been a lost two decades. So can we go full socialism in the United States as a reaction to this crisis? Yes. Look, in 2020, the Federal Reserve openly bought the bond market. Not quietly, not surreptitiously, not through third parties. They formally announced it. I have friends who were bond traders and got annihilated. They changed the rules of the game. We are continuing to move towards socialism. So could we see a 60% collapse in the stock market and the Federal Reserve come in and openly buy Apple? Sure. Why not? With an unlimited checkbook, you don't think that we could be off and running again? Okay. This is the kind of... Now, we know it leads to blood and tears. It's going to lead to the end of capitalism formally, the end of the entire experiment, if you continue down this road of socialism. But we have fascism. We've had fascism for 20 years, quietly. I mean, fascism, very simply put, is the merger of corporate and state interest. Okay, that's fascism. We have that on Wall Street. We have that in Silicon Valley. Why can't we formally have it with the Federal Reserve buying the stock? Okay, that's the kind of way that they can re-engineer one last rally. That doesn't mean it puts food on your table. It doesn't mean it gives you a job. It doesn't mean it helps you make your mortgage payment. That's not what they're concerned about. They're concerned about making a ton of money and extracting the wealth of the American people in consolidating power within the financial system. Each crisis that we've had continues to lead to more centralization of power, and you're seeing the greater chasm, the disparity between the rich and the poor. Why can't we continue that?
When you ask why can't we continue that, is, and I think you alluded to it at the beginning of the interview, what happens when everybody that are the largest dollar holders show up at the Fed window and they will not accept dollars, they won't accept T-bills, bonds, or notes, they won't accept any more paper, and they say, we want stuff. What happens at that point? Because there is an agreement in the background.
Well, no. Look, this will not turn into a dollar crisis without it first turning into a euro crisis. Okay, it's going to hit the euro first. So could it happen this whole? Of course it could. Now you cannot, but I gave you all this historical precedence for stock market crashes. I do not know any historical precedence for currency collapses, A, because I haven't studied it, and B, because currency collapses in modern times and among the West. Okay, you had the collapse of the British crown. Okay, that's it. I mean, that wasn't an overnight collapse. The whole loss of the British Empire actually took years, if not two decades. Okay, so what the collapse of the dollar is going to be historic, to say the least. It's something that you can't even study history to try and figure out. Like, how does this occur? So the best minds have said, look, because the euro, it'll go first in the euro. Could it go in the euro in October? Sure. If it go, I will be on your program. If we see the euro crumble in October, holy smokes, you got about 2 weeks to get out of the banking system in the United States because the whole thing's coming down.
Doesn't that link up to, because obviously you're a student of prophecy, you're a student of the Bible, the Word, all the charts and everything, but again, based on the prophecies of Wilkerson and Dudeman and Henry Gruber and all the guys that are the, you know, Valdez, I mean, all of them. I mean, we don't have the time to name them all, but the situation is there is a collapse. And, you know, I think that that's something that people have got to do, because the Bible is very clear. God doesn't do anything without warning us as people, but his people somehow don't want to listen to God. So will you address that?
I would look, this is my theory on the collapse. I don't think they collapse the system until 2032. I think there's one last insane. I think we're going to go into some insane times. Okay. Now, having said that, if you see a euro collapse, all bets are off. Like I'm going to say it for the last time. Euro collapses, you got 2 weeks or less. It's that simple. And you're not going to have to call Steve Quayle and ask him if the euro collapsed. Everybody's going to know. Okay. It will be dramatic. And they'll tell everybody it's contained, and it won't be. Okay. So when they tell you not to panic, that's a good time to panic.
Yes.
But here's the reason why I say they can engineer one final. Martin Armstrong, who is dead solid accurate, the most accurate technician on cycles. Oh, by the way, let's go through the crashes this year. Okay, so I told you all the configurations that are present for a crash. I have never seen a group of world-renowned technicians all in agreement. Martin Armstrong said the soonest we could crash is September, and he is saying something is terribly wrong in the stock market. And he, by the way, is saying we could crash in the stock market into November. He is not prone to hyperbole. I have never heard him call for a crash, ever. Okay. He consults central banks. He does not make outlandish statements. Peter Allottes, you guys can check him out. Peter Allottes has been on Wall Street 47, 48 years. I consider him the best technician. I consider him the best technician. Martin Armstrong is probably the best cycles guy. Peter Allottes says he has never seen the conditions he's seeing in the stock market right now. And he is warning that if we roll over from here and take out the 30,000 level on the Dow, we will have a historic crash also into November. He is saying this thing could, he's saying Tesla could lose 70% of its value in the next 3 months. Okay. Now, he's not saying it's going to happen yet. He said, if we roll over and take out that 30,000 level, all hell will break loose. All right. He has never missed a crash. He's been on Wall Street since the 60s. Yeah, early 70s. Charles Nenner is calling for a crash. Two of the best traders I follow on Wall Street are calling for crashes. Okay. So I've never seen this. I've never seen the technical guys, the traders, and technical guys and traders are not necessarily, you know, synonymous. I've seen the technical guys, the traders, and the cycle guys all saying the same thing. Okay. Now, Martin Armstrong, though, as well as some of the technical traders think, they're going to take the stock market to 100,000. Martin Armstrong is already on record saying they're taking it to at least 65,000. We're going to crater this thing into next year. They're going to have everybody convinced the system is coming apart at the seams. And then they're going to rip this thing up one last time. Now, we don't need to worry about that. If they take this thing down and the system holds together, I will say this. I'm not going to go into further cycles, but there is another cycle that says that between November of this year and July of next year could be a historic low off of which the final bull market in U.S. history takes place. I will say this for people that are confused about Martin Armstrong. Martin Armstrong is bearish right now. He's bullish beginning next year. And he said the United States will cease to exist after 2032. That's about as bearish as you can get.
Well, didn't he also say... Yeah, hey, Aaron, didn't he also say that he saw war for the first time? And he said, he basically said that if his computer had legs, I quote him, his computer would be hiding under the bed. Now, since you follow Armstrong.
For this fall and next year.
Yes. So what I'm saying, though, is that, you know, he's giving his long range forecast. He's giving his mid range forecast. But and you're the one that drew this to my attention. But he's never made that statement about war. And he wasn't he making it specifically. Was he saying Russia or China or both?
He believes that the United States by 2032 to 2036 will the dissolution. His computer is telling him, and he's using very sophisticated AI computers, are saying the American experiment ends in civil war and a Russian-Chinese invasion. Geez, where have you heard that before?
Yeah, Dmitry Dudeman and Henry Gruber.
And Henry Gruber. On.
But I guess what I'm trying to do, because I think it's confusing to me, it's probably confusing to some of the people watching. Okay, you're talking 2032, and, you know, there can be a total destructive force, and then whatever's left comes in, buys it up. It could even be foreigners at that point. But Martin Armstrong's immediate warning. Now, did Charles Nenner say that too, that we're in a war cycle? Because
Charles Nenner has us in a war cycle. His war cycle really kicks in to gear in the next 2 or 3 years. Martin Armstrong's war cycle, really, he says we get into it around 2025 to 2028, 2027, somewhere in there. But he doesn't believe that's the end. I think everybody needs to be very flexible in their thinking. I think God has given everybody a number of events. And I see this all the time in the prophetic, especially with my wife, who's gifted prophetically, is we're shown a number of events and we think they're different vantage points of the same event. Okay. Or we're shown an event and we think it's one time. The perfect example is with the Jews. The Jews have a promise of a coming. It's a dual fulfillment. There's two comings. Okay. So 9/11 was a phase transition. I mean, you and I were alive. It was questionable whether they were going to pull the system back. 2008 was a bigger phase transition. And I can be honest, nobody that I follow thought they were going to pull. We would be sitting here having this conversation in 2022. Okay. But that system was hours away. But they keep marching us towards a destination, which, you know, they're not letting these crises go to waste. So what I'm saying is you can have a major crisis this fall. You can have a major change in the economic. Look, each crisis is reducing the lifestyle of the American citizen. Okay.
Great point.
And the disparity between the rich and everybody else is increasing. I do not expect that trend to change. In fact, this could be the ultimate. Okay. And it could lead to more tyranny, more socialism, more. Look, they want a collapse in housing. Why do they want a collapse in housing? Because the biggest buyers of housing is BlackRock. They want the institutions to own all the houses and we become serfs. This is not so. So don't think that they're trying to prevent these crises from taking place. They would love for housing to be on the Fed balance sheet. That means if we get into problems with the Chinese, we can hand them the housing to accommodate some of our loans and some of the debt structure, some of the treasuries bills that the Chinese would want to redeem. Okay. So, but we could be looking. I continue to tell people you have to know, you don't let the end destination screw up how you navigate day in and day out during these crises, because these crises are giving tremendous opportunities. Okay. And again, I think we're going to see we're going to see a very, very, very strong dollar. Okay. A very strong dollar before the end. In fact, one of the signs that you're close to the end is not a weak dollar. It's going to be an insane strong dollar. Okay. It's when everybody is flooding to the US dollar as the final safety measure. They're going to, here's how this works. If you're going to fleece the American public, or if you're going to fleece the world, you've got to get everybody in the same boat. So if we had a massively strong dollar, I would say the odds of it's very counterintuitive. A weak dollar is not going to lead to our demise. Okay. A strong dollar is going to lead to our demise. Okay. So the stronger the dollar gets, that means the international debt loads are practically unserviceable, but that were taken out by the third world. So the emerging markets are going to get destroyed. So they're going to have an increasing, in fact, the only way for them to survive is to disconnect from the dollar. A weak dollar, what's the advantage of disconnecting? It makes their loans more affordable. Okay. So it becomes very counterintuitive. So I think that as everybody flees to the dollar to escape, and people are going to flee to the dollar. Let's be very clear. People will flee to the dollar in times of international crisis, in times of whether that's economic or war. So I definitely think war is coming in some limited fashion this year, next year, at least in Kiev, right? And we'll see if that spills out into the broader parts of Europe, or if the Chinese do anything in the South China Sea, or if they're content. You know, I will say this about the Russians and the Chinese. The Russians even more so than the Chinese, but the Chinese have a history of extreme patience. The West needs to not be looking at these events with a stopwatch. They need to be looking at this historically. And the Russians and the Chinese have nothing but time on their side. Time is on their side. The cycles say time is on their side. If you give the United States, I'll ask a pop quiz. Pop quiz, you give the United States 5 more years. What are we going to do with that 5 years? Are we going to strengthen the American family? Are we going to strengthen our moral fabric? Are we going to strengthen our industrial base? Or are we going to continue to do what we've always done?
Well, I think we're going to go retrograde. I think we're going to go retrograde.
So if you're the Russian, the Chinese, it's not like, oh my gosh, the Americans are going to get their act together and we're going to disintegrate in the next 5 years, left to our own devices. So all they've got to do, the only thing the Russians and Chinese have to do is build firewalls. And that's what the Russians are doing. They got to build a firewall. They cannot have this come into their country. They cannot have the collapse of the West infringe on what they're trying to do morally and with the family and with the societal norms inside Russia. And China's trying to contest us in the Pacific, and they need time to build their entire aircraft carrier fleet. So as long as they, let's go through one more cycle, just so everybody's clear. 1776, 80 years later, Civil War. Okay. 80 years later after that, World War II. 80 years after that, right now. When nukes are going off, that is not the beginning of war. That's the end. I find the average person thinks that war starts with nuclear weapons. No, that's the end. Okay. War always begins. War never starts kinetically. War always begins economically.
Yep.
Okay. The Japanese in the Pacific, pre-Pearl Harbor. Europe with the Germans in the 30s. Come on. I mean, everybody needs to have some basic knowledge of history. Okay. There are a variety of ways to contest and to promote your power and to project it. The kinetic militarily is the last phase. We're in World War III right now.
Right.
It started with a bioweapon release. It started 2 years ago. They have been messing with the supply chains out of China that are directly impacting the West, and they've been doing that for 2 years. That's economic warfare. They have been divesting themselves of U.S. treasuries. That's also part of the economic warfare. Okay. They are now putting the country on a war footing. That's, you know, it, with the manufacturers inside China. That's also part of it. So when it goes kinetic, that's not when the war started. Right? I mean, and if it goes nuclear, that's the, I tell people nuclear weapons being used is not the beginning of the war. That's like the final 30 seconds of the July 4th fireworks celebration. I mean, that's like, that's not the beginning. It's the end. And you all know to start grabbing your chair and gathering up your things when it goes like that on July 4th.
You're a military guy. I mean, you know, I've told everybody, you've told everybody, Rangers. And the thing is that what's astonishing to me, though, you have to figure into the equation the absolute destruction of the U.S. military from the wokeism to even yesterday's announcement that Special Forces was being ordered to give up their weapons. Obviously, the internal army, and all I'm saying is this, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, but it seems like if the West is provoking, even sending nuclear bombers with their fail-safes off on bombing runs, and Russia knows that, Russia, they still have an intelligence organization, you know, looking outward. All of our intelligence organizations are looking inward. So if, how does America's, how would you say this, defense posture at this point from a, as a military guy, you can say it's crazy, insane, but does it make sense if we've been quietly taken over or obviously taken over by communists? As yeah, you're seeing the acceleration, where are you at in that point, at this point, listening to Aaron, but also he's saying if we go nuclear, all bets are off. So your point, please. You're okay. Feeling at this point.
I guess I want to go back to the beginning, okay, because he said something about the calendar, the Jewish calendar, okay, and it, everything would line up with certain dates on the Jewish calendar. Is that, my question would be this, is that a deliberate alignment by individuals or actors engaged in this nefarious activity, or is this a
marker? That's a great question. No, that's a fantastic question. Okay. No, I don't think these individuals, look, I think that's God.
That's God.
You got to look at the significance of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and the Feast of Tabernacles, all in the month of Tishra, all back to back, and look at the significance of what Rosh Hashanah is calling. Rosh Hashanah is calling you to fasting and repentance before judgment. Yom Kippur is announcing the day of judgment, and that's when the markets are collapsing. Then they're bottoming at the end of the Feast of Tabernacles that celebrated the possession and taking of the Promised Land. Okay. The market's collapses are a form of God's judgment on the false weights and measures of the economic system. And we're not going to go into the significance of Jubilees or the Shemitah, the 7-year sabbatical, but it's all part. Let me give you this. You want to try this on? 1973, major bear market. 7 years later, the 1980 bear market bottom of the stock market. 1987, stock market crash. 1994, housing recession. 2001 crash. 2008 crash. 2015 crash. 2022. I just gave you 50 years of a 7-year cycle that continues to hit the stock market. You think the powers that be are doing that?
No. Okay. All right.
That's God.
So this is God, and that answers that question. So to wrap this up, as we only have like 5 minutes left, I can't believe how quickly this has gone. So what we're looking at then, Steve, I don't even know. what to say or what to ask, except, I mean, I'm going to have to listen to this probably two or three times to really suck in the value of this information. This is stuff that nobody's talking about.
Yeah. And that's why Aaron is, because of his combination of understanding economics and history. But Aaron, even as, you know, von Clausewitz, the most famous statement that when goods don't cross borders, armies do. And now we're seeing a complete lacking and locking out of the Russian wheat, the gas that's necessary, neon gas, fertilizer, all this stuff, energy. And yet it seems like, isn't it interesting, Doug? And Aaron, address this, and I'll let you have the last word because, you know, it's important that people hear this. But as you see that statement, it was by von Clausewitz on war, and I believe he was quoting somebody else. So go ahead and, if you would, close it out with your thoughts with that idea of where we are in goods, and, you know, just take it and it's yours. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, let me just, okay, so let's, because I know this is probably, some people are like, probably their heads are spinning, other people are like taking notes, and other people are totally confused. Okay, let's. Here's my basic thesis, summation. Because of the planets and because of the Jewish calendar, and because of a lot of cycles, this year has a potential to see a historic crash that rivals 29. That's point number one. Point number two, most of the damage will be done by October 21st and into the end of November. November's another turn. Okay. That will have dramatic effects, negative effects on the American people, but that should not be confused with a currency collapse. The euro has to collapse first. We'll talk about that if we see the euro go, but right now I am not entertaining a dollar collapse debate. Next, could potentially be setting this up for massive socialism and massive Fed intervention into the U.S. stock market openly, which has never occurred before. Okay. And the people would welcome it. The average American, because of their 401ks, would welcome that type of intervention. We could continue to go towards more tyranny and more socialism and more fascism in our economic condition. They are transforming society on our way to our destruction. So this could be just part of that transformative experience. We definitely are headed deeper into the war cycles. War has already started. The war can be maintained for longer than the average person thinks without it going kinetic. And there will even be phases in the kinetic action. I believe that the system, according to Martin Armstrong, and I would agree with him, will not survive post 2032. So this is, we're in the final days. Okay. We are in, from a historic, I know that's 10 years, but in the scheme of history, that is nothing. Okay. And it's not going to be 10 years of, you know, this isn't going to be the roaring 20s. Okay. This is going to be a very difficult time. Some would refer to it as the time of Jacob's trouble. This would be very difficult times that the average person economically will be ill prepared for. So what we could be looking at this fall, and let me be clear on this, if getting beyond the dollar, you could see Bitcoin collapse. So you could see cryptocurrency collapse. You could see gold and silver collapse. You could see the bonds collapse. You could, your stocks collapse, real estate collapse. You could see a total liquidity crisis where they have to sell the good to pay for the bad. Okay. That's what happens to gold and silver. And gold and silver will take off after that event. But in 2008, it also got sold during the event. Okay. I want people to look at these events, but understand them historically and have a long view and be prepared and not just prepare for the next 60 days, but prepare for the next 5, 10, 20 years.
Wow. Talk about the big picture. Aaron Brickman, skipper.io. It'll be in the program description box. Steve Quayle, stevequayle.com, gen6.com, and of course, hagmanreport.com. Folks, thank you. Gentlemen, thank you. All right, we're out of time, and have a good night, everyone.